All right, Katie, I don't know if you've seen any of my podcasts, but I always do what I call a stupid introduction, which means I don't say, well, so and so went to Duke and then whatever, because I don't remember that and I don't actually care very much. So I usually say some impression, especially initial impression. And I don't remember how. I think the first time our first encounter was when you interviewed me for your podcast. And I don't actually know how that came about, but it doesn't really matter. But the main thing I remember from that is afterwards, when we were going to do a second one, you said to me, "Could you please not refer to doctors as idiots?" And I actually thought that was a great request because, I mean, first of all, it's inappropriate of me to do that. And I thought it was a very legitimate, sound thing to re ask. So I like that. So with that, Katie has actually come a little bit more into our circle and has actually done the curriculum and is coming to some of the doctors' meetings at the clinic. And so she's I th you know, I would I think it's safe to say you're on the periphery of our world here, and that's good. I think it's hopefully working out for you. Maybe we'll hear a little bit about that, but I've heard only good things from our crew as far as the the value of having you part of us. So it seems like everything is going well. So the question that people want to hear is, who are you, and how does an oncologist by training end up with this crew in the new biology clinic sort of world? And again, thanks for being here. By the way, this is another episode of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. I'm told I should always say that, but I forget. So, anyways, welcome. And maybe just start by, who are you? What was your journey? Because I've heard some of it and it sounds really fascinating. And so, how did you get what happened here?
Sure. Well, thank you, Tom, for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. And so I was a traditional radiation oncologist. I practiced for 20 years, specializing in breast and gynecologic cancers. And I also served as a healthcare leader, really running end-to-end cancer care for a large healthcare organization in the US. And in 2018, things started to pop up for me. And the first time that I started to question my profession was when I was at a meditation retreat and I heard the parable of the river. And the story goes something like this. Once upon a time, there was a village perched alongside of a river. And one day, the villagers noticed a person drowning in the river. And so they sent someone out to rescue that person. And then the next day, there were two people drowning, and they organized and rescued those two people. And then the next day, four, and then eight, and 16, and it was doubling every day. And so the villagers became very organized and created elaborate rescue teams with boats and pulleys and rescue protocols. And the village elders praised the villagers for such an amazing job of rescuing the people out of the river. And I was at that meditation retreat with a good friend who's a GYN oncologist, and my heart just sunk. And I turned to her and I said, "This is us. Like, this is what we're doing. We are glorified rescue workers on the river. And, like, what the heck is happening upstream? Like, why is this happening? And also, by the way, we're getting the people onto dry land, but then I have no idea what caused their cancer. And who knows that they're going to fall back in the river?" And so that started in 2018, like where my wheel started turning, and I was like, something is wrong here, but I couldn't put my finger on it because when you're living in that world, everything is organized around that, and they're saying you're doing such a good job, but I knew something was off. And in 2019, I started to.
Hang on a minute. And just to say, I didn't say this, but I see some part of my role here in this is, and I may interrupt if And
Sure.
just to clarify things, so I don't forget. But the thing that, I mean, that's a great story. How did you end up at a meditation retreat in the first place?
So I've always been, I would say, spiritual and seeking, but not in my career necessarily. So I was into meditation. I was
For years.
for years. So I was raised Catholic but made to do the whole Catholic thing. And at 15, I just was so angry that I had been made to be confirmed, and I basically eschewed God and all things religious. And when I was 20, my sister's best friend was dying of a brain tumor, pineal blastoma. And she called me and she asked me to pray for her best friend. And she was so upset. And I just realized, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't pray. I really believed that there's something greater than me, but I couldn't pray to that, whatever it was, because here I had just abandoned it since I was 15. And so that night I just pleaded with God or whatever is the source, and said, if you show me, I will seek you. And the next morning when I was running, so I was a professional triathlete at one point, and so I had been continued to train, and the next morning I was running, and I came across a book in my pathway while I was running, and I was like, I think that book is for me. And I was gonna go get a coffee, and I said, if it's still there when I come back, I'm gonna pick it up. And I came back and the book was still there, and I picked it up, and it was Houston Smith's Religions of the World. And there was a chapter for all the different types of religions in the book. And for me, that started me on a journey of just seeking through spirituality and looking at different religions. And so I had kind of continued that through my entire adult life.
Would you say that was the first time? That's probably not the first time, but it was an important time in you realizing there was more ways of being spiritual than being a Catholic.
Yeah, because I think what had happened with Catholicism is I had just completely shut it down and
Yeah.
had just cut that part off. And I was like, screw God, screw all this stuff, the guilt and the things that were taught in the church. And then this was kind of an opening of me realizing, like, oh, I do believe that there is something bigger, and I want to know what it is. And I don't want to follow dogma. I want to kind of follow my own path.
Got it. And you know, it's interesting because my impression even of this story with that at the meditation retreat is that wasn't the first time for you. It's a sort of way place to begin the story, but you'd been in this, you know, even being a triathlete is not the usual path for most doctors. I mean, some, that's not that unusual, but yeah. All right.
Well, and even my pathway into medicine was kind of unusual, and death, as we will see, is that has been a common thread throughout my whole life.
Yeah.
But the way that I came into medicine was that I was a biopsychology and neuroscience major as an undergrad, and I was wondering like what I could do with that, and I knew that medicine was one of the things, and my mom, who was a nurse practitioner, was kind of cautioning me against it. And so I was like, okay, well, what's the one thing that I really wouldn't like about medicine? And I said, well, I'd never been around anyone close to me in my family who had died. I actually had not a best friend, but a very close friend die in fourth grade of leukemia. But I really hadn't had much experience with death. And so I thought that being around people dying would be the worst part of medicine. So I decided, and this is unusual, this is probably when you'd be listening to the story and being like, this is weird. Like, what's going on with this girl? But I basically was thinking that death would be the hardest thing that to deal with in medical school, and so I went ahead and volunteered at hospice, and that
Oh.
experience changed my life. And I learned things from being around people who were dying that I had not been taught, you know, by my family or whatever. Like, what did they wish they had done differently? What do they wish they did more of? You know, and things that I heard then and then continue to hear throughout my career is, you know, they wish they had the courage to be themselves and be authentic. And so that was just like really beautiful being around people who were facing their own mortality. And that's why I actually went into oncology. And so, yeah.
Would you say it's a characteristic of you to figure out or determine in some way or somehow that happens what would be hard for you and then try to do it?
Yeah. Well, and actually, the funny thing is, when you invited me to your staff meetings, I was like intimidated because I'm new in this space and I was scared. And actually, I was like, shoot, I mean, it was the first day of school for my daughter when I first came to your staff meeting. And I was like, I could just cancel and say, you know, it's the first day of school and it's too stressful. And I was like, no, you're scared. So you're going to go because that's actually means that you're in the right spot. If you're pushing yourself and it's making you feel uncomfortable. So in everything that I've done, I was a springboard diver before I was a triathlete, and that's all about fear and conquering your fear. So that's definitely been a theme for me.
I mean, it's a profound insight into life. Like, for instance, Tom Brady, the football player, when he was asked how come he got to be Tom Brady, the football player, he said, "I only worked on things that I was bad at." Now, a lot of us who've been athletes and other things, what you realize is that you practice the things you're good at. 'Cause it's fun, right? Like I'm good at doing this shot, so I keep doing it over and over. Look at how good I am. And you never become, Tom Brady as far as a football player, because that's not the way to get anywhere. And it's a hard lesson to learn. And it seems like you sort of got the hang of that.
Well, I
Because
think
you
that's it served me well,
Yeah,
you know,
it's
and I've come to the top of, you know, not the very top of fields, but gotten pretty high up. Like I, you know, was a Division I diver in college, and then I got injured and I couldn't dive, and my coach said to, you know, stay in shape. My boyfriend was a triathlete. My third triathlon, I made the national team and was, you know, a professional triathlete, you know, traveling the world. And then in medicine, I, you know, ended up at the end of my career, right before I left, I was nominated for the national medical director of one of the largest healthcare organizations in the US. And I know that now I like cringe. I'm like, oh, it wasn't real good work that I was doing, but this fear, you know, really embracing my fears and just going after things has allowed me to
Yeah.
accomplish things that I wouldn't have been able to do if I hadn't been willing to go into the fear
Yeah, no,
and be uncomfortable.
that's a kind of a synopsis of how to succeed or how to get the most out of yourself. That's a funny way to say it, but yeah. All right. That's fascinating. All right, so now we go. You had this meditation and then I interrupted you. What was going to happen next?
Yeah. So in 2019, I started to get the message that you're not supposed to be practicing radiation oncology. And that message just didn't make sense. And I had been telling
And
my
here you
husband,
are, like National Radiation Oncologist of the Year, sort of. Whatever.
whatever, right? But yeah, I was also an entrepreneur. So I have a patent and I had a clothing line for women with sensitive skin from radiation treatments. And so I was doing that and all these, you know, but I knew that I wasn't going to leave medicine to go run an apparel brand. That was really just as like a service, like a passion project to help these women find comfortable clothes. But I was starting to say to my husband, something's off. Like, I don't know if this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And he was saying, well, you didn't finish training until you were 32. Like, what are you going to do? And I was just like, I don't know. I just am getting this message and I don't know what it means. And so he basically said to me that, If you are not happy making $500,000 a year, you are good at your job, you're doing something meaningful, treating cancer, your colleagues love you, your patients love you, and you have like everything you would want materially, maybe you're never going to be happy. Like maybe the problem is you're never going to be satisfied. And so now I know that that's obviously not correct, but and we're no longer
It's one way
married.
to look at it.
Correct.
Yeah, got it.
So I internalized that for a while and was trying to figure out, like, reconcile why am I having these feelings? And two events happened, and both coming back to the theme of death. One was that I had been with a patient when she transitioned, and this was actually using medical aid in dying, and I only had one patient who ever ended up taking those medications. She had advanced esophageal cancer. She was 83. She didn't want to die suffocating on her saliva. And when I moved to Oregon and learned that it was legal and had my first patient request this, I had said, no, I can't do this. Like I took an oath to do no harm. And I couldn't reconcile it. But there was a movie called How to Die in Oregon that came out that changed my mind, that I said, okay, well, maybe this is a humane thing to do. And so then I just made myself available that if any of my patients wanted to pursue this and they met criteria, that I would do it. And not only would I prescribe that, but I said that if they wanted me there with them at the bedside, I would be there with them. So in
Wow.
2019, I helped a patient transition, and it was
Help
beautiful.
means gave them medicine drugs.
Yeah, I didn't administer it. They have to take it themselves, but I had prescribed it, and then she ended up taking it. And it was actually like just the most beautiful spiritual experience, her daughter, myself, and her. And but when I left her house, I had this knowing that when I leave this life, I'm leaving alone, and I'm going to have to answer to myself that I lived my life in a way that was aligned with what I knew to be true. And I knew that had something to do with my
Hang on,
husband.
you said you knew you were leaving alone, yet this person had other people with her.
Right, but when you leave this body, your soul, when you leave this
Yeah.
vehicle that we have, that we then encounter our wholeness, and we are accountable for how we lived our lives. That's what I mean in terms of we leave alone. Like no
Got it.
one's coming with me, and I can't point to my husband and say, well, I stayed in radiation oncology because he wanted me to. It was that kind of thing. So that happened in 2019 that just started me thinking, like, oh, I have to really grapple with this. And then in 2020, I ended up having an experience called a shared death experience. And this is like a near-death experience, but different in that the person who has it doesn't transition. It's usually healthcare professionals or emergency personnel who are at the scene where someone dies. Someone else there has a metaphysical experience of experiencing the light and the love and all of that. And so that happened to me in the fall of 2020. And like a near-death experience, it totally fundamentally shifted things for me. And all of a sudden, I could see what we were doing in Western medicine was wrong. Like, this is not correct. This is not the way that you heal cancer. And so, after that event, I was like, I have to leave. But I also know that that means that it's going to cause me a divorce. It's going to, I'm going to have to do this on my own. And it was a big deal. So it took me.
And up until then, you kept from the time of this other experience until then, you kept being a radiation
Yeah.
oncologist. Yes.
So I, yeah. And even in 2020, I was still practicing. And actually, that shared death experience happened 1 week after I had finished interviewing for the National Medical Director position for. I had been nominated for that position for all of the United States.
Got it.
And I knew that it came down to me and one other woman, and I didn't get it. And I was like, I know I'm meant to build something, but I know it's not within the system. Like, I knew that as soon as that happened. And then the next week, I had the shared death experience. And so basically, then it took me a
Can you
year and a
flesh out how, like, what you saw, heard, felt, or what, I don't
Sure.
know,
Yeah.
what this experience was that said this is not the way we're supposed to do medicine?
Sure. So what happened was that I was meditating again. Again. So it was my practice to meditate, but and maybe I'll just tell you the full story. I don't always tell this full story because it's a little weird, and I think that sometimes people aren't, but I
They're
know
all
that you can
weird.
hang with the weirdness. So what happened was that I had a woman that I knew from, like, she was a trauma therapist and also a had traditional therapist, and I had seen her for trauma therapy just because I had trauma from my childhood. And then she had moved into doing more like drumming ceremonies and kind of shamanic work. And she called me. This was like around that time when that week that I had, or I guess around the time when I was finishing the interviewing for that job, and a week before I had the shared death experience. And she said to me, she said, "This is going to be the weirdest phone call, and it's very uncomfortable," because she said, "You're a doctor and I'm a therapist, and I would never do this." But she said, "I have to stop the messages." She says, "The messages just will not stop coming." And she said, "Spirit is telling," and I didn't know, like, spirit, I'm like, all of this was totally foreign to me. And she said, "Spirit has told me over and over and over, you have very big power and I have to help you." And I was like, "Who's spirit? And like, what does that mean? What are you talking about?" And she's like, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, what do you think we should do?" And she said, "Well, maybe we should do a drumming ceremony." So the day of my shared death experience, that afternoon, I had gone to this woman's house and she had done this drumming. And basically, it was just, frequency, like elevating my frequency through this drumming. And she had me gather some things from her studio to put on the altar before we did the drumming. And one of the things that I had picked to put on the altar was this giant apophyllite stone. It was literally, I could barely hold it. It was probably like 50 pounds. And so we had done the drumming ceremony. And then she said, "The stone wants to go with you." And I was like, "With me where?" I was like, "This giant stone?" She's like, "Yeah, the stone wants to go with you." And I was like, "What?" So I was like, "Okay." So I'm like, "If you'll help me get into the car, I'll take this thing home." But it was this giant stone. And so I take the stone home. And that night, I normally meditated in the morning, but the stone was calling to me. And it was like, "Come put your hands on me." So like,
That, did you
okay,
hear it or?
yes, I heard it. And even though I haven't been like open spiritually, like I was always seeking. So I'm always game. I'm always like this is the whole fear thing. I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna go check it out, see what's going on. So the stone was calling to me. So I went down and I put my hands on it and I started just meditating. And basically I was just like breathing and clearing my mind. And immediately when I started meditating, a woman's voice started talking to me. And what she said was, "I can't let go, but it's not because of me, it's because of them." And instinctively, I knew she was dying and I knew she was talking about her family or friends. And so then I just started talking to her and in my mind and basically said to her, "There's no rush. You'll know when it's time. And I'll stay with you." And I kind of just stayed with her as if it was someone who was in my physical presence. And at some point in the meditation, I saw that this woman was a woman named Misty. And I had never met Misty, but I had been helping Misty's best friend care for her as she was dying of breast cancer, because her best friend was one of my colleagues at work. She was an administrator within cancer care. And I had been helping her make sure with Misty's wishes were honored and that she could stay home and that she, and also helping her cope with the loss of a good friend. And they were both in their early 30s. So just helping coaching my friend through that. And so I saw that this was Misty. And then I just stayed with her. And basically, at some point in the meditation, I started to feel something pulling away from her body, which now I would describe as her soul. And I started to hear pops, like pop, 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 pop. And then all of a sudden, it was like a whoosh of air opened up. And she gasped and said, "Oh my gosh, I never had to worry. It's so beautiful." And as soon as she said that, she was gone. And I was just engulfed in like the sun. It's the best way I can describe it. It was just like in just complete love and light, like ineffable. You can't explain what that feels like. And so I was in that space for hard to know because like time just doesn't exist. But I was there for some period of time. And then I came out of it and I was like, what just happened? Like, what was that? I didn't do any drugs in that drumming ceremony. I hadn't taken any drugs. And I didn't tell my husband when I went to sleep because I was like, he's going to think I'm crazy. And so I went to sleep. And the next morning, I woke up to a text from my colleague with a picture of Misty saying, "Thank you for all of your help with Misty. She died last night." And I was like, no shit.
No, she didn't know. She didn't know it.
She didn't know anything. And I was like, I don't know if I tell her because I didn't want to upset her. You know, at the moment, I didn't know what to do with that. And so I said, "You know, you're welcome. I'm sorry for your loss." And I said, "I know this is a weird question, but what time did Misty die?" And sure enough, she died within minutes of the time that I had been in meditation with her.
And
So,
that woman was with her. Yeah. Wow.
And so eventually I told her, and actually it was comforting for the family and my friend. And they said that Misty had been resisting. So I forget whether she was late 20s or early 30s, but very young. And she had really been resisting. And they were like, they knew she was ready, but she didn't want to go and for like 5 days. And what they described was that on Sunday night, or whatever night this was, I can't remember, that night, all of a sudden she just relaxed. And they had all surmised that someone from the other side, like maybe a family member or friend who had already passed, had come and helped her. And so when they heard this story, they're like, oh, that's so helpful to know because we saw that she was struggling, 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 struggling. And then all of a sudden just became totally peaceful. And, you know, it happened very quickly. So, and I know now that that happened as confirmation for me to confirm that that did really happen, because I think otherwise I would have been like, I don't know what that experience was, you know? But after that, I started to really change. And the best way that I
Did you
can
keep the
describe it,
rock?
no, okay, so the rock went back to the woman. So that was the rock's purpose, I guess. So I gave the rock back to the woman.
Really? You decided, or did the rock tell you?
I think I said to her, you know, whenever you feel like the rock's supposed to come back, because it's like this, I mean, probably thousands of dollars for this beautiful apophyllite, you know, and it was
Yeah.
hers and she had loaned it to me. So I didn't even think about, you know, but what's
Yeah.
interesting that you bring this up is I had just recently, and also there's an energetic component to my work, which you and I have not talked about before, but I now have an apophyllite stone of my own that's big that I'm using.
Got it.
Anyway, so what happened with that was that I just started to change and I started to see things more clearly and I could start to see like, oh, this system is really broken. But I can't say that I saw it in that event. It was more like something changed me. And the best way that I've been able to wrap my head around it from a logical perspective, which I think this is not logical and reason doesn't apply here, but is through David Hawkins' work. And he talks about with near-death experiences, when people cross over outside the veil, that they're bathed with these very high frequencies and that it fundamentally shifts them. And that for me, I feel like is what happened. And I almost feel like I'm an antenna and my antenna was tuned by that event. And so now when I used to just read voraciously, like I could read, you know, I'd read at least 80 books a year and just consuming information. And now I like tune, and if something catches my attention and resonates, then I'll dive in and read something. And actually, that's how I came across your work, is that I saw a lecture, I think it was from the Wise Traditions conference, about like what makes us sick and what doesn't make us sick. And that my antenna just was like, oh, this is resonant. And then I just started diving into reading your work and reading your books. But so that's when I say that it showed me things. It wasn't like it showed me a picture. It was just like it fundamentally shifted something for me where I could no longer ignore these signs. And so basically then I knew I had to leave, but I also knew that that was going to dismantle my life, And so I basically had to walk through that. And ultimately I resigned or left my job in radiation oncology in the summer of 22.
That was like how long after that experience?
That was a year and a half because it basically it happened in the fall of 2020. And then in December of 2021 is when I finally had the courage to tell my husband that I was like, I can't, I know that you don't understand this and you're not going to be along for this ride, but I have to leave. And one of the big sticking points with that was he was like, well, if you knew what you were going to do and you just jump into administration or another job, it's fine if you don't want to be a radiation oncologist. But what I said to him is, I was like, I don't trust anything. I'm like, I'm not going into any training. I'm not jumping into administration. I need to leave the system so that I can figure out what's right and what's wrong and what is going on. And that's what he couldn't sign up for.
I mean, it's interesting. We could, yeah. I don't know if that's worth exploring. It's like, because it seems obvious that you couldn't just, if given what you experienced, that you couldn't just go, well, now I'll just be an administrator, right? I mean, but anyways, that's okay.
Yeah, which is why ultimately I think that relationship had to end. He wasn't, I couldn't be doing the things that I'm doing now if I was still married to him. So that needed to happen.
Got it. Got it. All right. So then you quit. And so then what happens?
So I quit in the summer of 2022. And I mean, it's funny. I'm like, do I go all in with you, Tom? Yeah, let's
And
just
by
do
the way,
it.
we're this public, although we don't have to public, we don't have to post
Yeah,
it.
well, I'm just gonna be totally transparent, and I don't share all of these things in every space because I don't feel like every audience can handle them, but handle it. But what I realized in retrospect was what had happened when my shared death experience was that I had come into a coaching program for someone. And unbeknownst to me, the energy of that coaching program was being held by a very powerful shaman. And basically, I'm just going to give the short story of this, but the Carlos Castaneda books about Don Juan are very popular, right? People now, I think you remember that, but maybe younger people don't remember those books. But the books were about Don Juan, Yaqui Indian shaman, but really a sorcerer, like a very powerful. And the whole concept of the books was that Carlos had apprenticed with this sorcerer, and Carlos never apprenticed with that sorcerer. Those stories were actually of a 13-year-old boy, which makes more sense. This is kind of how shamans are trained. It was a 13-year-old boy who had ingested all those plant medicines and done all that work with Don Juan, and he sold his story to Carlos because his father had died and he had to support his family. And Carlos said, nobody's going to believe that a 13-year-old boy ingested all these plant medicines, so I'm just going to make myself the apprentice. And the boy was like, well, I don't care. He got approved, he got permission from Don Juan to sell these stories, and so that he could support his family because his dad had died. He was putting his brother through medical school because his dad's dream was his brother to become a doctor. So he was putting his brother through medical school and supporting his mom and sister at age 14. So he sold these stories to Carlos. And then, as we know, those became very, very popular. Carlos made millions and millions of dollars. And actually, anyway,
And
that is.
just as an aside, I had a big influence on my life. And in fact, I've actually given talks about it, and now I'm realizing I probably knew nothing about it. But
Okay, so
Yeah,
and we I hope
that's fine. I
yeah.
mean, that's fine.
So yeah, but so
But
and actually this may make sense to you is people started to question at some point because Carl the first four books were real apprenticing with Don Juan. Carlos wrote the rest of them on his own and they became a little bit distorted. And so, and then Carlos became kind of distorted and people started questioning, like, was Don Juan even real? And did this happen? And anyway, that young boy is now a 70-year-old man. And he is as powerful, probably more powerful than Don Juan. And I had come into his, frequency through this coaching program. And because I'm so sensitive, I had just opened from that. And that's how my spiritual gifts started opening. And ultimately, I ended up, connecting with this person and now mentor and probably would call I'm an apprentice to this
Did he
very,
identify
very.
you, or you had just were part of the program?
Okay, well, let's I'll just so the program what started to happen was I started to remember things. Like I started to be like I'm here for a reason. And I don't know I didn't know what it was, but I could just sense and I started getting these messages and then also gifts started opening up like I can actually help people transition when they're dying and I can sense emotional trauma in the body that's causing illness in the body. And these were just things that started to open for me. And because I was in this group, you could get on his list to actually do a call with him. The way that he works with people and now doesn't actually, his list is all closed, but at the time it was open, you could get on a wait list. And then the way that he works is you do a phone call where he connects to your, basically based on your time of birth, location of birth. I think that's basically, identifying you in the quantum field. And then he channels basically what comes through, and you have a call. And then you do candle work with him, which is basically healing your light body through the elements, through water, through fire, through different earth elements. And so in December of 20, basically I had gotten on his list, and the list was like 4 years at the time. And so I was on his wait list, but then I happened to be with some girlfriends from that coaching program that actually had already had their call with him and are working with him, and they were his wife was going to come have dinner with them, and I didn't know that this was not normal. These are not public people. These are people who, work in the background, and so she came to have dinner with us, and when she sat down and she started talking, I felt a male energy coming through her eyes and jaguar, like it's almost hard to say, like it was like a jaguar, a male jaguar coming through her eyes, and immediately I felt the love of God, like what I had felt when I had gone, on my shared death experience outside the veil, and then also I had already helped a couple of patients with that, and so I knew what that felt like, and she was explaining that he came in complete. This is like a different being. This is, we come in and we forget who we are, but this is someone who comes in remembering who they are. And so, she talked and, we went through the whole night. And then I said to her at the end, I said, okay, your husband is not like us. Like he holds the frequency of God. And I know that just because I had crossed outside the veil. And so then she said, you're correct. And she said, your call is going to be in a couple months. So all of a sudden, I was moved up the list and had my call. And usually, people, he's probably worked with thousands and thousands of people just like healing through the elements with the candles and stuff. And there are very few people on the planet who ever met him. But then I ended up meeting him. And basically, I work with him. And he also guides my practice and helps me energetically in the healing for my clients. And I never expected that, or, but it's programmed, right? Like we come in and everything is programmed on a spiritual level. And, he's explained that to me. There's a reason why you have an MD. There's a reason why we've come back together. And I didn't expect to share all of this with you. And I'm okay with it actually being out there because I think at some point I'm going to have to say what's really going on.
Is there a choice in the program? Like, do you
Well, the
get.
program, so the program was just like I was just in a coaching program that was 3 months and then I was
No,
done.
I mean the big program, like.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Free
Yeah.
choice. So I could have been like, you're crazy. I'm out of here.
Right.
Yeah, so absolutely. No, and actually, to choose into it, this is a very challenging path because he teaches through allegory and it's all coded. And so a lot of people choose out, who are walking this path because it's freaking hard. I had to give up everything, right? Like, and then so what ended up happening is when I left my job in 2022, I thought that I would be able to then take a couple
You
months off
did
and
this
then maybe.
before you left your job.
What's that?
You did this session happen, this meeting before you left your job.
Yeah, so I made the decision to leave in December of 2021, and that was like the same month that I had my call with him. So I had not met him, but I had my call, and immediately after I had my call and started working with him through the elements, my whole life blew up. And my husband was like forcing me to get the vaccine, and I was like, I'm not doing it. And so it just blew up my marriage. Like all of a sudden, everything blew up. Like I had told him I was making the decision to leave, but then it just all of a sudden, things kind of exponentially started to unravel. So that was, I started doing candle ceremonies in December and then met him for the first time in March. I left, left my job in July and then really started seeing him more regularly and spending time with him and having physical contact, after I left. But what he explained was that you need time to heal. Like you can't give people what you don't have. And so you need to do your own internal work and healing before you can go out in the world and help other people. And so I spent from, the summer of 2022 until October of 2023, really doing my own internal work and healing and working with him. And then launched my practice in not even a year ago now, so October of 2023.
And just what describe this practice? Like, what do you mean by a practice?
Yeah, so my practice, I work with people on a 3D level, helping them detoxify their body and nourish themselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and helping them strip away the conditioning to get aligned. But then also energetically, he is working with my, not everyone, so I do consults, but then people who end up working with me on an ongoing basis end up working with him through the elements as well. And so there's this energetic component, and then I'm facilitating the things that they need to do to get themselves cleared out, on a more physical level.
And what kind of people come to this? Are these like sick people, cancer patients,
Cancer.
only cancer patients?
I'm open to seeing people who don't have cancer or are, wanting to heal from other things, but my practice has been primarily about cancer.
And this is, it's an online thing, or do you see people in person?
Yeah, so my work is all virtual.
All virtual. Wow. So.
I think I stumped you. I'm like surprised you.
Well, yeah, but I'm gonna keep going here. I'm gonna plug along. So, given that, what do you think this cancer is?
I think that we are overloaded with toxins and that we're not nourishing ourselves in the way that we're meant to. We're disconnected from nature. We're, getting interference from EMFs and blue light, all the things that you say really feel like cancer is an imbalance of healthy functioning of the body. You know, we're basically not getting the nourishment that we need to like make ourselves healthy, and then we've got all of these toxins, and basically this is an imbalance. And that's what I work with my clients. My whole practice is about helping them detoxify and then nourish themselves with good, healthy foods, similar to what you recommend with Weston A. Price, and you know, getting the connection with others and connecting with earth and sun and all of the things to that our bodies need. That if we have that, you know, cancer, we all have had cancer cells. I mean, this is a question for, I mean, you and I, we've had conversations about this. What is cancer? I really think that it is toxicity. I don't know if it's the packaging of the toxins or if it's because the cells get so, and I know I'm like using the word cell, but I'm just going to say it because I'm not sure yet. But, you know, whether you have this switch into fermentation because the cells are so toxified and the mitochondria aren't working. I really think that it's all about the mitochondria for cancer. But yeah.
And what do the mitochondria do?
Well, I think that this is, you know, and actually the reason why I came across you, I want to come back to that and then I can answer this question. But the reason why I came upon your work is that I was, you know, listening to that lecture, and then I saw that you had a book, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart. And when I saw that book, I said, oh, that probably is an answer for my boyfriend. And I started reading that book because he had heart failure. He was a professional athlete and basically was winning professional races at age 50 and diagnosed with heart failure because his PCP hadn't ordered an EKG and he sent him for an echo and basically had an EF of 15%, which for your listeners who don't know, that an EF of
That's fast.
15% means you can't walk to the front door, let alone the mailbox. So winning a professional cycling race at age 50 is just bonkers. And so I was trying to find answers about that. And when you started talking about the water, my mentor, he's been talking to me about water, 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 water for like a year. And I was like, are you talking about water they drink or what? It was like, but it's all in coded, right? And so unless my frequency was at a place where I could actually catch what he was saying, I could not get it. And when I started reading your books, I was like, oh my God, this is it. I was like, I finally figured out what he's been talking about with water. And so I think the mitochondria are responsible for structuring the water in our cells, and this is the problem. So you actually are tied in with this, you know, whole thing, and it's not an accident that I came across you know, and that we've connected. And it's also not an accident that you had given lectures about Don Juan and all of that. So I don't know what that means, but this is just kind of the way my life is unfolding at this point, which is magical and also quite bonkers.
Okay. Before we get into how people can find you and maybe work with you, I'm gonna say one story that I heard, and then I'm gonna try to see if I can find this article I'd be fascinated to hear what you think. So it was an anthroposophical doctor in Europe. I'm not sure where. I think Germany, but it may have been not Germany. And he claimed he his thing was he could see that what they call in anthroposophy the etheric body or the water body or the life body. And he also had a strong interest in the dying process and helping people through the dying process. And he said that he could see. So in anthroposophy, they say that death means this life body separates from the physical body, and then the physical body is just dust, you know, or it's just he does what minerals and the earth elements do. So he could see this happen, and he could see this similar to what you were describing. He then only once had an occasion of a And it sounded like a woman who was horribly suffering, just the worst you could imagine, like rectal cancer or vaginal cancer that had eaten through the rectovaginal wall, and the stool was coming out through her vagina in horrible pain. And the woman had begged her to help her, do the transition. And he didn't want to, but he did. And what he saw was a fragmentation of this etheric body as it left. And so instead of coming out in, I don't even know the words, like one piece, it came out like it had been disintegrated or broken into hundreds or 20 or I don't know how many pieces. And it had an incredible difficult time coming back together. And he said he's never going to do that again. Is that?
And are you, I guess my question is the question related to because he helped her transition that the way that the body, that the light
Yeah.
body was somehow affected by that choice of the end? Is that the question, or what is the
Or
question?
just, I don't know. There's just a. Yeah, I happened to that. I was very much affected by that story because, and I don't know if it's true. I don't know the guy, so I don't know if he really seeing what he says he's seeing. Anyways, that was the end of any interest I ever would have had, which I never really did, in assisted suicide, because if that's really
Yeah.
what happens.
Well, what's interesting is that I did not have that. So I did see the
Yeah.
light leave my client patient in, that I helped in 2019. I didn't realize I had that gift. Now you know what I'm saying? In retrospect, now I know what I saw, but hers was like all
Yeah,
together.
it
And
sounds.
yeah, and so but I do know that the light body can be defragmented from trauma and all these things, and part of the integration when someone releases this body is that they need to reintegrate with their wholeness, and that can take time
Yeah.
depending on, and that's why in this lifetime it's so important to come to peace and be truthful about what you know is your truth, because then you can have peace when you leave, because you really do there, it can be fragmented from living in this reality. We can get all messed up from it, and it takes time to reintegrate.
Yeah. My take on what you just said then is he saw something that was a real experience, but was for that person, and he generalized it. So that's always what happens, and that's probably not was not a
Correct.
valid generalization, but it did
Yeah.
happen with that one person. All right, so we're out of time. I have only one final thing to say, but tell people how they can contact you, or if they want to work with you, or hear more about what you're doing, or any of that stuff.
Sure. So my website is katiedeming.com, and I have a podcast called Born to Heal where I bring on guests to share the things that I wish I had been taught in medical school so that my listeners can learn along with me about true healing.
Got it. And that's where they would sign up, like to do a consultation or something,
Yeah,
on
you
that
can find that
website.
on my website.
I occasionally run across a person who I'm going to say what I'm going to say about. My impression right now is, so I've spent my life thinking about these things, but not experiencing them. And in a way, wishing that I had experienced them. Maybe I do in some way that I'm not appreciating. And it's incredibly powerful to hear the story of somebody, in this case, you, who actually has done more than thinking about it, but actually has experienced the water and how the soul works. And it's great. It's a gift that you're willing to share that with people, which is inspiring and gives people a new way of being in the world. And it's I think really the essence of courage to do that, because it's not easy, because people can say all kinds of stuff. Anyways, that's what I got out of this. So thank you for sharing all this. It
Thank
really
you,
was
Tom.
amazing to hear. And I look forward to a lot of further collaboration.
I love it. Well, thank you for being open, and actually it feels good to share this more openly because
Yeah.
it is weird, right? So I think that's why I haven't shared it, is just because I don't think a lot of people can understand it. And so thank you.
I have a saying now, if it isn't weird, it's probably wrong.
I love that.
Because all the things I think are actually accurate are weird. So if it's not weird, it's probably wrong.
Perfect. Then I'm in the right place.
You're in the right place. All right, Katie Deming, thanks everybody. And I'm actually looking forward to the comments. I always get comments on these things. And we will be in touch.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks.